and welcome to Comment with me, Roshan Mohammed Saleh, standing in for George Galloway this week. In George's absence, we'll be asking one main question today. How has the US used Daesh to engage Iraq and Syria? I'll be arguing tonight that Daesh, or ISIL, is the Frankenstein's monster of the West. It was the West, particularly the US and Britain, which laid the ground for extremism to flourish in the Middle East by destabilizing Iraq in 2003. And just like the West used death squads in Latin America to take out their enemies in the 1980s, they're using death squads in Iraq and Syria to counter their enemies, namely Iran, Hezbollah, and Bashar al-Assad. Of course, they claim to be fighting Daesh, but in my opinion, it's all window dressing and public relations. The reality is, they deliberately created the conditions for Daesh to thrive, and they're quite happy to let them run havoc across Iraq and Syria, as long as they don't threaten Western interests. Anyway, whether you agree with me or disagree with me, you can call me on +44 208 601 4555 to share your views. You can also SMS me on +44 78 00 00 80 66. And you can email me on comment@presstv.co.uk. And I promise we'll prioritize your views or calls if you disagree with what I'm saying. Now, just a few brief words on our main topic tonight. Before a US-led coalition invaded Iraq in 2003, Al-Qaeda and Daesh simply didn't exist. But once you destabilize a country and get rid of its central authority, its army, and its bureaucracy, you create the conditions for extremist groups and criminals to thrive. So Al-Qaeda in Iraq was born in 2003, and most of its leaders spent time in US custody. Then, hey presto, Al-Qaeda in Iraq morphs into Daesh a few years later. Now, the West has since repeated this trick in Libya and Syria, and I'm sure it would dearly love to in places such as Iran. So don't let anybody tell you that it just happened by accident, that it was the unfortunate consequence of bad post-invasion planning. No. They knew that extremist forces come to the fore after countries are destabilized, because that's what always happens. It was a deliberate policy. Wake up and smell the coffee. Secondly, for the first 3 years, at least, of the Syrian war, Western countries hardly lifted a finger to stop their own nationals going to Iraq and Syria to join Takfiri groups and to destroy other people's countries. They did the same, of course, in Libya when they successfully took down Colonel Gaddafi with the aid of their shock troops on the ground. And they only started to get concerned about their nationals going to Iraq and Syria when those very same nationals started to threaten to bring bloodshed to the streets of the West itself, which is another convenient benefit that Daesh bestows on the West. It allows them to scare their own populations and to justify increased counter-terrorism and surveillance measures at home. Moreover, the US is, of course, extremely friendly with regimes who have a direct relationship with Daesh. The Saudis, who share a similar Takfiri ideology to Daesh and who funded them. The Qataris, who fund and give media support to similar Takfiri groups. And the Turks, who let Daesh cross their border into Syria. Of course, these countries now say they're all fighting a war against Daesh. Well, all the US seems to be doing is protecting their allies, the Kurds in northern Iraq. The Turks, meanwhile, seem to be using Daesh as a cover to fight the Kurds in Syria and establish their own de facto state there. The Saudis are too busy bombing Yemen and dealing with the Daesh blowback on their own soil to do much. And the Qataris are too busy supporting Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Syria and spreading sectarianism to do much else. So it seems to me that Daesh suits Western interests any which way, when they're fighting them and when they're not fighting them. They use Daesh to fight and destabilize their enemies. They use Daesh as an excuse to intervene in conflicts they want to intervene in. And they use Daesh as a means to scare their own public and bolster the military-industrial complex. So the West is effectively the arsonist, setting fires here, there, and everywhere, as well as the fireman who says he's needed to put out those same fires that he started. But we also need to move beyond simply blaming the US for everything. We know what they do, and there's no point appealing to their better nature to change their policies. Rather, they need to be forced to change their policies. Whatever our sectarian or political viewpoints, we must all support an end to war in Iraq and Syria and a return to stability. And that means supporting the central authorities in both countries and supporting those who are actually fighting Daesh and other Takfiri groups like Jabhat al-Nusra on the ground. That means the Iraqi and Syrian governments, Russia, Iran and Hezbollah. The alternative, make no mistake, is ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Damascus, Baghdad and Beirut, and who knows where else soon after. Only once stability is achieved can a country develop, progress and grow. Only once stability and security is achieved can meaningful reform be enacted. But countries in a state of war have no hope at all. Okay, I'm going to stop talking for the time being, and without further ado, I do hope to take some of your interventions, some of your calls. A reminder that tonight we're talking about Daesh, or other people prefer to call it ISIL. And we are talking about how the US, and perhaps by extension the West and their regional proxies, have aided them. I'll be arguing tonight that the US bears direct responsibility for the creation of Daesh, for the creation of other Takfiri groups, even Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Syria, by destabilizing the region, which I'll also be arguing is a deliberate policy. It's not something which, you know, they say that bad post-invasion planning, we didn't foresee these events happening, our intentions were good. No, they've done this before. They've done it in South America in the 80s. They did it in Libya. They've done it in Syria. They know what's going to happen. It's obvious. You don't need a PhD in geopolitics to realize that if you take away a central authority in any country, that country is going to fall apart and the people in that country are going to start fighting each other. Please give me a call. Hopefully you can see the number on the screen, and we do have somebody on the line, I believe. Waheed, who is, I'm not sure where Waheed is calling from. Hopefully we can get that information up very soon. In Germany. Waheed, welcome to the show. Go ahead and make your point, please. Oh, actually, Waheed, you're on Skype. Yes. I thought it was going to be a phone intervention. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming on. What would you like to say about what we're talking about tonight?
Well, I want to point out about this leaked DIA memo from 2012 that was obtained by the site Judicial Watch about a few weeks ago, that Mehdi Hassan actually did a whole interview with the former DIA Defense Intelligence Agency, where he basically admits to some of the items in this, where back in 2012, the United States was basically predicting the formation of the Islamic State Daesh and encouraging these developments willfully.
Yeah, I did see that interview. He basically said that history will not look kindly on the invasion of Iraq in 2003. This is a very senior US defense official.
Yes.
So you believe that, I mean, some people, Waheed, would say that this is a conspiracy theory.
Often
people who support my viewpoint and your viewpoint will be dismissed as conspiracy theorists. There is no direct link between the US and Daesh.
Can they argue with the actual memo itself, where, you know, I've actually highlighted the memo itself, where it says that development of the current events in Syria and Iraq develops into a proxy war. And then Western countries, the Gulf states and Turkey, are supporting these efforts. And then it says this. This is in the Pentagon memo itself. So, I mean, you know, who's wearing the tinfoil hats here? It's not us. I mean, they're admitting this themselves.
And what do you make of the what do you make of the war on Daesh, the war on ISIL, that they all claim to be enacting?
I think this is there's nothing going on. They're actually helping them. You know, there aren't real airstrikes. I mean, we know that the Turks are actually providing the supply lines, the military supply lines to Daesh, into both Iraq and Syria. And now, you know, they've used this pretext of bombing the Kurds as one to further help Daesh. Of course, they don't admit this officially, but this is what's going on. So it's a joke, really.
And I mean, it seems to me that the U.S. to a certain extent. I mean, during the George Bush years, it was direct intervention, wasn't it? It was cowboys and Indians, you know, it's got that kind of mentality. Whereas Obama perhaps is a little bit more clever and he's working through regional proxies rather than directly involving U.S. blood and treasure.
That's right. Yeah, that's what he's doing. But, you know, the goal is substantially the same. They're using these various proxies and then Turkey, et cetera. And the Gulf states to basically destabilize both Syria and Iraq. And this is willfully being done.
And in terms of countering this, these countries are being destroyed, aren't they? It's absolutely heartbreaking. What can be done to counter this?
Well, I mean, Iran is doing the bulk of the man work to counter this. I mean, both on the military aspect of the war and also on the information side of it. I mean, the very existence of Press TV and the narratives, the true narratives that Press TV is putting out about this war is invaluable. It has really countered significantly this propaganda war of the Western powers against the people of the Islamic world and the Middle East, specifically Iraq and Syria. What we all have to do who know what it's really going on is we have to work harder in getting the word out to really break down the narratives, the propaganda that the West
do you think the media narrative has changed? Because I noticed at the beginning of the Syrian conflict it was overwhelmingly the focus was on Bashar al-Assad's alleged crimes, etc., etc., and the other side of the story wasn't getting heard. But have you noticed a perceptible change amongst public opinion in terms of the media coverage of this war?
Well, at every stage where the Western MSM media try to push these propaganda narratives, they themselves tripped over themselves. And, the alternative media such as Press TV, Russia Today, etc., really did a service in relentlessly pushing the real story by getting people out there on the ground, getting, real... what was really happening on the ground out to the outside world. And, where it all began to unravel was, number one, the whole nonsense about the Ghouta massacre. That when that story was unraveled, that kind of changed a lot of perception. And then once it became more and more and more evident, as actual evidence came out, that this was a proxy war and these were Takfiris, and it wasn't the people of Syria against their own government, these were actually foreign mercenaries. This began to change a lot of perceptions, and people who were calling people like us conspiracy theorists needed, to basically go back to the drawing board, and they have.
I mean, how concerned are you about this this whole phenomenon of Takfirism? I mean, it's been there in the background for many years, but it seems to have just exploded, doesn't it?
Yes.
Since the so-called, Arab Spring or Arab revolutions. Is the genie completely out of the bottle? Will it ever be put back in the bottle?
Well, eventually, I think the fire will basically put itself out at some point. But unfortunately, I think not before it does a lot of damage, just like the Frankenstein monster. Let's not kid ourselves. It is the West, the Frankenstein monster. But the issue is how much countries such as Iran and the government of Syria itself can hold and resist this.
Yeah.
And eventually it will break down, I think. But it will be a while before we get there.
And my final question is, I mean, we're both in the West, you're in Germany, I'm in London. How much of a threat does ISIL, Daesh, groups like that, Takfiri groups, pose to the West itself, do you think?
To be honest, I think zero, because these groups are ultimately being controlled by Western intelligence agencies. As the example of Paris, the Charlie Hebdo issue earlier in the year, substantially proved, at least to me anyway, and a lot of other people out there. But, you do have elements that could potentially go rogue.
Okay. Thank you very much, Wahid Afzal from Berlin there, for coming on and sharing your expertise with us. Thank you very much, brother. Okay, well, that was Wahid from Germany basically saying that Daesh, ISIL, whatever you want to call it, is the product of Western intelligence agencies. I think these groups are pretty open. I don't think that's a far-fetched thing to say, because they're ultimately quite open to infiltration, and that's exactly what intelligence agencies do. They infiltrate their enemies. We have Bani in Switzerland. Bani, we've only got one topic tonight about the US and Daesh. What would you like to say?
Well, good evening. Thank you very much. God bless you all for this great program you have. And I hope one day we can use it in Geneva, Switzerland, next to United Nations, to make it more executive. Well, the attention of what's going on in Syria, first they were calling them Friends of Syria, and now you call them Daesh. I don't want to call them Daesh. They don't have no name except Murder International Army. You found them from all over the world, whoever was rejected in their society or at home. And then there are a lot of young people who are victim of this assassination team, who now you call them Daesh. And similar to that, 14th century ago, they were making assassination to the family of Prophet. Maybe today is in is the modern way what they are doing today in all those holy lands in Iraq, in Syria, and well, of course, as you know, they started with Iran in 1981. Saddam Hussein, go, we are behind you. Mm-hmm. And this project of what we are seeing, unfortunately, today in the Arab world, which they don't have no more the minimum vitality, no hospitals, no school, no doctors, no nothing, that will go on for another 50 years, unfortunately. And that has been in a program of, please forgive me, I call them Big Satan, Grand Satan, yeah. Because this is no movement than the satanic movement that what they are doing.
Okay, thank you very much for your intervention, Bani. Sorry to cut you off, but we are going to move on. All I would say in kind of response to your points is that, I mean, I'm very concerned about young Westerners, ultimately young Muslims from the West going over to join these Takfiri groups. And I think that most Muslims, most Muslim leaders in this country have made a concerted effort to denounce ISIL, Daesh, and to discourage their young people from going over there. But ultimately, a tiny minority of them still decide to go over there. These are often very kind of naive, gullible young people, radicalized perhaps by Western foreign policy, suffering deprivation, suffering Islamophobia, growing up perhaps with a hatred of the West. And I think ultimately, the kind of reasons behind radicalization, all of them have to be addressed, such as foreign policy, such as Islamophobia, such as deprivation. But also, I think it's incumbent on British Muslims. That's where I am at the moment, so I can talk specifically about British Muslims, and especially those perhaps who can reach the radicals in our community, to really hammer home to these people that they shouldn't be going to Iraq and Syria and ultimately destroying their own lives and destroying other people's countries. Joseph is in Australia. Joseph, we're talking tonight, of course. Our question is, how has the US used Daesh to engage Iraq and Syria? Joseph, what is your opinion on that?
Hi, Roshan.
Hi.
I think the US has used ISIL to a certain extent, especially a year ago when they swept through so much territory to take the control back from the Shiite-dominated Iraq. Mm. And I believe there wasn't a proper central government, like you said, that would represent all the Muslims of Iraq and the Christians and the other minorities. And so the Sunnis felt, left out. And yeah, that's why groups like extremist groups like ISIL were flourished, and they could gain so much popularity.
Yeah.
And as a threat to the West, I don't think ISIL is a threat to the Western countries. They're the threat to the Christians in the Middle East, which I greatly feel sorry for. But the real threat here in the West is basically secular humanism and all this atheism and left-wing agenda, especially it's thriving in England where there's the no-God agenda. But in the Middle East, the secular humanism can actually help Christians because they're a minority. And but the radicals are the danger, only in the Middle East. But here in the West, I wouldn't say the Muslims are the danger. You know, it's just a bit painted. You know, it's a bit bit of a far-fetched.
Joseph, you make quite a few points there. Let me just go through them. I have a problem with people throwing around. I mean, we have a tendency, especially in the media, to talk about Shias and Sunnis, Shia Iraq, Sunni Iraq, the Shias this, as if they're two separate blocks. And I think it's a dangerous thing. Broadly speaking, we perhaps can talk about the Shia world and the Sunni world, but there's a lot of overlap. And in Iraq, there's a tremendous amount of overlap. You'll find the same families containing Sunnis and Shias. Unfortunately, you know, in the sectarian times we live in, that is happening less and less. You know, the government of... I mean, I know plenty of Shia Iraqis who are very upset about their own government, and who feel that you know, they haven't been served well by the corruption of their own government, and in terms of poor areas, there are poor areas in Iraq which are Shia areas. So it's not just you know, so-called Sunni areas that are suffering perhaps from not so great a government there. I do agree with you that ISIL isn't really a threat to the West. I think it's completely overblown. I mean, ultimately there are a few nutters in the West who perhaps do want to do harm to civilians, you know, place bombs on trains and buses. But ultimately, a lot of them are monitored. Most of them are monitored. Most of them haven't got the capacity or the brains to carry out serious attacks. And if they do succeed, they might succeed once in every 10 years, kill a few people. That's a few people too many. But ultimately, it's not the existential threat that is, it's being made out to be. I mean, Nazi Germany was an existential threat to the West. You know, Russia and China have nukes. You know, these guys, they don't have anything and they can't do much. And I think ultimately the threat is being exaggerated to bolster, to scare our populations, to make them hate Muslims, to make them hate an enemy. A country always needs an enemy. But also to, you know, fill the coffers of what I like to call the military-industrial complex. I'll just let you come back in, Joseph, if you've got any further thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. It, see, the West should really clean its own backyard, all the immorality that they have. And I mean, speaking from a Christian point of view, the West should not have invaded Iraq, because it just, if they really were concerned for the Christians in Iraq, they actually would not have... I even thought about attacking Iraq, because Christians had the best, you know, had equal rights, and they were flourishing and surviving. And yet, when Saddam left, everything just turned down to the pothole. You know, he was keeping the peace. As bad as he was, he at least he didn't have anything against the Catholic Church as much of these English secular humanists and all these liberal media who now let them see what ISIL is doing. Now they should shut them up.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you made that point, because I have a lot of sympathy for minorities in the Middle East. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. Personally, I'm not a fan of Saddam Hussein. Never was. I'm not a fan even of Bashar al-Assad. I never was. But ultimately, you know, in Syria especially, minorities had their rights. You know, and now Christians are leaving Iraq and Syria, especially in droves. And Christians have always been the part of the fabric of the Middle East. And, you know, I believe that Muslims, Christians, other minorities, they all have to live in that part of the world together and peacefully, and they all have to have their rights. And unfortunately, we have these takfiri groups that are being sponsored by the West, and regional players such as Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and others, who are, you know, letting them run amok and kill minorities. Okay, we're going to go into a short commercial break now. We're talking about Daesh and how it's being sponsored by the US. You can call me on the number should be appearing on your screen. I think it's on your screen. We have one main question. Is the U.S. use Daesh to engage Iraq and Syria? You can call me on +44 208 601 4555 to share your views. Don't go anywhere. I'll see you again in a few minutes. Welcome back to Comment. We're taking your calls today on one main question. How has the US used Daesh or ISIL to engage Iraq and Syria? I've been arguing tonight that Daesh is the Frankenstein's monster of the West, a monster which allows the West to fight its enemies, a monster which gives the West an excuse to intervene in foreign conflicts, and a monster which also allows the West to scare its own domestic populations. But without further ado, because I think I've spoken quite a lot tonight already, I hope to take some of your calls, and I think we've got somebody already, Robert, via Skype. I'm glad that I can perhaps... Robert in Peterhead. Robert, I think we've spoken before, and I'm glad I can see your face this time rather than just hearing your voice.
Yes,
welcome to the show, Robert. What would you like to say?
I'd like to say that, without a doubt, the United States is using ISIL, Daesh, for its own aims. I mean, it created ISIS itself by supplying it with weapons, guns, bombs, training. I mean, it's the same Frankenstein's monster story that brought us into the mess in Afghanistan. They saw an opportunity in the Syrian civil war and wanted to, expand their Middle Eastern sphere of influence, as it were, and therefore trained the Syrian rebels, the FSA, Jabhat al-Nusra, Ahrar al-Sham, and these groups all eventually came to form the sort of Frankenstein's monster that became ISIS.
And, do you believe, Robert, can I just stop you there for a second? Do you believe the relationship is that direct? Because, it's my job to a certain extent to play a devil's advocate here, and the US would deny that. They would say, look, we've never trained, ISIL. We've never given them weapons. What proof do we have that that's actually happened?
Well, we have proof. I mean, there's a video footage of a... there was video footage, I think it aired on RT, I think maybe 6 months ago, maybe prior to that. It was during the Siege of Kobani. There was footage of American weapons that had been dropped in. There was crates you could see. ISIS recorded the footage themselves. You could see them jacking open the crates with crowbars. You could see AK-47s, rounds of ammunition. So, and the Americans could have said that it was for the Kurds, but then again, in the whole world of war, can anything be really, really certain? American government is seeking to expand its sphere of influence. They've been sticking their fingers in everywhere. Turkey, Israel, Syria, Iraq. They've been using the conflicts in these regions to further expand their sphere of influence. They've been sending jets to bomb the heck out of Syria and Iraq. And I would think that they were trying to use this to sort of send the Iraqis and Syrians into sort of fear, and they're trying to say, look, you need us here. You need us to protect you from these barbarians.
Yeah. Yeah, it's what I was saying earlier on. They're playing the arsonist and the fireman kind of at the same time.
Yeah.
Robert, do you see now, in looking back with a bit of hindsight, do you see the whole kind of, others might call it the Arab Spring or the Arab Revolutions. Do you see that as a massive Western move to destabilize the region, or is that veering again into the realm of conspiracy theory?
Well, it's sort of a yes and no kind of. I mean, like, as George Galloway said, I'm not sure. I think it was on Question Time. He says, "I'm a supporter of all the Arab revolutions," but then again, David Cameron. But then he says, "I'm a supporter of all the Arab revolutions," but David Cameron and Barack Obama certainly aren't. I think they've been trying to sort of get involved with revolutions that can either hinder or hamper their influence. I mean, they've been supporting Saudi Arabia in its campaign to quash Bahraini protesters, and it worked. Unfortunately, they said that the Egyptian general that now has full control over Egypt was restoring democracy after restoring democracy after a democratically elected president was overthrown in a military coup.
Yeah.
That's restoring democracy for the Americans. And while at the same time they were bombing Libya, and they were bombing Libya into the Stone Age, and they wanted to do the same thing with Syria, and now that ISIS are involved, they've got a valid excuse to go and do it.
I think the main difference between Syria and Libya is that Libya had no allies.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, you know, they had a kind of love and hate relationship, didn't they, with Gaddafi?
Yeah, they did.
It had improved after the year 2000, but before that, they didn't like him at all. But in general, I think it was their kind of way into the so-called, you know, Arab revolutions.
Yeah.
But Gaddafi had no allies, no one to back him up, no one to defend him. So NATO just bombed the hell out of that country.
Yes.
But Syria has allies, and powerful allies.
Yeah.
A world superpower in Russia, a regional superpower in Iran, the strongest, you know, some would call it militia or fighting force in the region, Hezbollah. You know, they have staunch allies that have stood beside them, and the Syrian Arab army, of course, has done the bulk of the fighting. So they came up against something that they didn't quite expect to. Maybe they thought it'd be a cakewalk, but they haven't got their little, you know, regime change operation. It hasn't been so successful in Syria, has it?
No, it hasn't. Not at all. They thought they could just go in and steamroll Iraq and steamroll Libya like they did. My apologies. They thought they could steamroll Syria like they did with Libya and Iraq. But what they failed to realise is when you go up against Syria, which has very, very powerful allies, like you mentioned, Iran, Russia, China as well, is completely against NATO intervention in Syria. And, of course, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Yemeni Houthis are allied with Syria as well. If you threaten to go into somewhere that has a huge network of allies throughout the Middle East, you're talking about setting the Middle East on fire completely.
Yeah, and that's what they've done. I mean, ultimately, a revolution is not a revolution if it has to be, if it relies on foreign interference.
Of course.
If it relies on foreign funding, foreign arms, and if Saudi Arabia turned off the taps tomorrow, if Turkey didn't allow anyone across their border, if Qatar stopped the funding and media supports, the so-called Syrian revolution would be over tomorrow. There might be some fighting which would carry on for a while, but it would be squeezed. You know, this is a conflict which, if there's the political will, this is a conflict which can be finished. Do you agree with that?
I think that the Americans and their allies have carried things too far now. I mean, I think what we're going to see is just a complete and utter war of attrition, because the Syrian army is not powerful enough, even with Hezbollah behind it and with the Quds force of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they're not powerful enough to sort of try and quash all the Syrian jihadist groups. I don't think they're powerful enough for that, and the jihadist groups and the so-called Free Syrian being powerful enough to topple the Syrian government. So I think I foresee that there will be a war based on both sides, and I think that they're just going to grind Syria to complete halt. They're going completely to completely, and they're just going to ruin any hope for it.
you're breaking up a little bit there, Robert, so we're going to say goodbye, but I really appreciate your sentiments, and my producer did tell me how old you were as well, which I won't reveal to our audience, but given your age, I think you're geopolitical insight is quite remarkable. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Robert there from Scotland. And I would just finally agree with Robert as well, that I think that ultimately in Syria, you're faced with two forces that possibly cannot win a complete victory. You, on the one hand, you have groups which are backed by the US, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey, with all the money and military might that that entails. And on the other hand, you have the Syrian Arab Army, with Hezbollah, Iran, Russia standing with it. So two powerful forces. And I think both probably realize that a complete victory is impossible. Or I think the Syrian Arab Army, or the Syrian side, they have offered negotiations at many points. They say that ultimately the only way to solve this conflict is politically. Bashar al-Assad himself has said that many times. I just wish the other side would come to the realization that there is no military solution. Perhaps Syria, you know, won't be completely destroyed and the region won't be completely set on flames. Fareed is in Canada. Fareed, we're asking tonight, how has the US used Daesh to engage Iraq and Syria? What's your point of view, Fareed?
Hello, hi, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
I just wanted to point some stuff for you before the people understand why the U.S. and the British insurgent and the Zionists try to have this army killing people without innocent people. One of them, as you know, Iraqi army, when they take over the Anbar provinces a couple of months ago, and American army helped the Daesh to take back Ramadi and other places in Iraq, and by giving them the satellite picture of the where is the Iraqi army located, and they did this satellite picture they did 1998 with the Iran-Iraq war, and they give the same satellite picture to the
Iraqi army. Do you know that for a fact, Fareed, that they gave the satellite pictures to ISIL? How do you know that?
I know that. I am sure that. I am in politics for many years. I know what's happening, what they're doing. And, for example, U.S. and British intelligence and the Mossad, what they did, the Zionists, what they wanted to do, they're doing the dirty job with this Daesh army. But taking over the Iraq and Syria and control all oil fields, you know the Israel flag, they call it, from they have two lines on it. One of them saying in Arabic, we know that between Nile to Furat. And right now, they took over Nile and Furat. And Nile means Egypt. Already take over their government and they're doing the dirty job for them. And right now, these Wahhabis, because they are the Wahhabis, you know, in the beginning against Islam, because they prevented with who? The British. At that time, they brought two religions to the our region. There was the Baha'i and Wahhabis. And these Wahhabis right now doing their dirty job to control that oil field, what happening there in the Middle East. In Syria, you know, in Syria, I used to live in Syria. I know what's happening there. In Syria, the people was living together, Christian, Muslim, Jew, all of them living in peace. But what happened with this? Bringing up the religion, they call themselves Islam army, but they are not Islam. They have nothing to do with Islam. They are against Islam to come destroy the Islam. That's what's happening. And the British and U.S. And the Zionists trying to use the same army to destroy Islam and take over the oil field. That's the important, and changing the government in that region.
And one thing I would say is that Syria, despite everything, the people in Syria, I think there was a need for reforms in Syria, without a doubt, but the people, I mean, I've been there only once myself, but I know many people, other people who've been there prior to the war, and they said that, you know, ultimately people had their, you know, people, I mean, obviously there was political repression, I think there's no doubt about that to a certain extent, if you oppose the government. But in terms of the government did not discriminate against minorities in terms of whether you were Sunni or Shia or Christian or Alawi, etc., etc. And there was a level of coexistence in a country which, you know, has many different sects, and ultimately the argument goes if the central authority is removed from that country, then it really is a tinderbox, a sectarian tinderbox, a political tinderbox. And we found that to be true over the last 4 years, unfortunately. Thank you, Fareed, there in Canada. Bonnie is in Nigeria. Bonnie, thanks a lot for calling in tonight. We're asking, how has the US used Daesh to engage Iraq and Syria? Go ahead and make your point, please.
Yes, thank you so very much. I don't know why George Galloway or where he is. Please do extend my greetings and the greetings of many people who enjoy watching Press TV and the work, the great work that these people are doing.
I think George is abroad somewhere. He gets around a bit, but I'm not sure exactly where. But I'll pass on your greetings.
Oh, thank you so very much. I would say that the United States and the government and intelligence agencies of the Western countries directly and indirectly created Daesh. I would say indirectly because their calamitous invasion of Iraq and what they did in Iraq created the enabling environment for groups like Daesh to arise in Iraq. And we will all remember that even before the Syrian crisis started, that this same government, as well as their proxies in the Middle East, I mean the Saudi and the Qataris, and their media agencies were already against the government in Iraq, particularly after they booted NATO out of Iraq. It became very obvious that time that they were already fanning the sectarian ember in Iraq. They were accusing the government of Maliki of all sorts of sectarianism. They were ISIS was doing in Iraq at that time was being justified on the basis of sectarianism.
Yeah.
And you watch Al Jazeera, you watch BBC, you watch CNN and the rest of them, they were already preparing the ground. So ISIL was already, or in its putative form, was already in existence in Iraq. And when the Syrian crisis started, they now moved ISIL from Iraq straight to Syria. And when it was in Syria, what happened? That is the direct involvement of the United States. In Syria, the United States and the Western governments, Israel, Turkey, and the Gulf monarchies, created the enabling environment for Daesh to blossom.
Bonnie, I'm gonna stop you simply because we have other callers on the line that I want to get through before the end of the show. But you make several excellent points there. And what I would say is I think Joe Biden, the U.S. Vice President, he just said a few days ago that Iraq should split into three, a Shia area, a Sunni area, and a Kurdish area. And of course, this is something that was being said back in 2003 when, you know, there are a lot of people suspecting that this is exactly what the U.S. wanted, the dismemberment of Iraq to make it, you know, on sectarian lines to ultimately make it weaker. In terms of the north of Iraq, that's the Kurds already de facto have a state. I think it's becoming more and more clear that they want to see the dismemberment of Iraq like they want to see the dismemberment of Syria. What they don't want is strong states in that part of the world. If a state doesn't go along, I mean, Saudi Arabia, for example, goes along with everything the Americans say. So does Qatar. So does, you know, even Turkey nowadays, unfortunately. So they're not bothered about those states. But states which are perhaps in the resistance axis that don't do America's bidding, those are the states that they, you know, if they can't control them, their attitude is to destroy them. You know, and what a horrible attitude to destroy other people's countries. I mean, us in the West, we live in peace and security and stability. We enjoy that and a reasonably high standard of living in the States, in Britain, in Europe. We're enjoying that, and yet we're going to other people's countries and we're destroying those countries, often in the bogus name of human rights. It's quite sickening. Mohammed is in Libya. Mohammed, we're asking tonight how the U.S. has used Daesh to engage Iraq and Syria. You know, they did in the country that you're in at the moment. You know, ISIS didn't exist before 2011. ISIL or Daesh didn't exist before 2011. Now it's taken over a whole city, hasn't it, Sirte? Mohammed, go ahead and make your point.
Thank you, Mr. Roshan, for having If you look at the situation in Libya today, before 2011, we don't have anything dash. We don't know anything dash. But today, you look at Sirte, just 280 kilometers from where I'm studying. It was a terrible, terrible situation that people living there. They are slaughtering people every day by day. Mm. The same thing in Darfur that is going on. So I think the project of America in the Middle East, I think, is to destroy the strong government that stands against them. Yeah. Alongside with their so-called Arab moderate friends, countries like Qatar, Turkey, Saudi Arabia. They are the ones that they divided our country into two. We don't know what is going on now in our country. Everything, in fact, you can't move freely more than 20 kilometers from anywhere location you are because of this interference that they come and put in our country. Every day is destruction, killing people, killing innocent people. But they come here in the name of, they come here to help the civilians. And now, their own people that they send in, they are the ones that are killing the civilians.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, we don't even understand how Daesh managed to enter through to Syria. Some people are suggesting that there may be some American plane dropped them or the European or somehow. We just don't know. Look at what is going on in Syria. They are not here to fight Daesh. For at least 1 year, they claim that they are fighting Daesh. But even today, I see it in the news, Daesh sees about 5 villages in northern Syria. So what are we talking about?
Sure. Mohammed,
destroy the whole country that goes.
Mohammed, just to stop you there just for 1 second, if I have time, I'll let you back in a few seconds. I mean, everyone seems to have forgotten about Libya. Don't they? But you know, no matter what we thought about Muammar Gaddafi, there was peace and stability in Libya. I mean, Libya is notoriously perhaps, you know, three countries in one, and he managed to keep all the different tribes in Libya together. And then, you know, NATO starts bombing the country, and look where we are now. It's a den of extremism. Al-Qaeda is running rampant in that country. ISIL have taken over Gaddafi's birthplace, Sirte. I saw what I can only describe as a snuff video the other day, where ISIL members in Libya, on a beach in Libya, were slaughtering Ethiopian Christians, beheading them. Libya is just a no-go zone. This is the great success story. It was sold as the great success story of the Arab revolutions, and the West had helped the Libyan people, you know, reclaim their rights and reclaim their freedom. You know, it's one of the biggest terrorist states in the world at the moment, but no one focuses on Libya because they're all focusing on Syria. Mohammed, if you're still on the line, or I'll let you come back very... We have one more caller, I think, and you've only got a minute. Orang in London, make your point very quickly, please.
Yes, hi, Roshan. I don't know why I always end up at the end of the show, so I can't make my comments as much as I want. But as a whole, I agree with your statement that when you started, that this is the old method of divide and conquer, which Western capitalism is always used in Latin America, and they did the same sort of massacre and beheading and killing and destroying the whole countries. And they are doing that same thing in the Middle East. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, but that's all you're going to get time for. All right, you got to call earlier. You're going to call earlier next week's show, and I promise we'll get you on and you can make your point fully. But for the moment, I'm going to have to say goodbye, Orang. That's all the time we have. Don't forget to continue the discussion on Twitter and get other people talking about the questions that I've been asking you. George Galloway will be back here on Comment Live at the same time next week to take all your calls on the burning issues of the day. Stay tuned to Press TV for the news. Bye-bye.
Can I have your telephone number? I can have your telephone number. I'll call you back. Can you make sure your television volume is turned down to 0?